Willkommen to Culpix Radio WCPX. Celebrating the month of October is your host, Django Nudo.
And ich bin der Schmuttpedler.
And very soon we're going to get to the Oktoberfest on Viagra. Yeah.
Yeah.
But before we do that, it's been a very good karma month for Culpix, because not only have we achieved our 888th upload, but it is an incredibly special film, very close to our hearts. Tell us what it is, Smoke Peddler.
It's Death Race 2000, directed by Paul Bartel, starring David Carradine, Sylvester Stallone, and Mary Voronoff, a very, very long-time favorite of mine, which I watched on VHS back in the early 80s.
And you have the poster as well. I think it's the French original.
I have the huge French poster now on my wall.
And it's a gorgeous version of it we have. I don't know who did the restoration, but it looks stunning HD. And it just brings out every detail. And the sound is crisp as well. I mean, this is Mad Max Fury Road for a certain generation. It's just great on so many levels.
I'm very much an inspiration for films like RoboCop, for instance, and a bunch of other films like post-apocalyptic, where a corporation has taken over government and stuff like that. So it was really a pioneer job.
Yeah, and so we're super thrilled to have it on Culpix, and I expect, I think even though it had been on release for less than one day, because we put it up last weekend, it already ended up in the top 10 for this week. Yeah. So I'm sure it's going to be one of our all-time most popular films. If you haven't seen it, see it. If you have seen it, watch it again.
The year 2000. America is a vast speedway. People line the streets to witness the greatest drivers on earth in a race from sea to shining sea.
This is a death race.
You finish first, or not at all. Death Race 2000. Every car a deadly weapon. Every spectator a potential point. It's a cross-country road wreck, and the traffic is murder.
Now, we've been talking for some time about being available on a certain platform, and we're not going to announce anything because we've only done a soft launch, but this film is available on a certain kind of platform that has been requested many, many times.
So especially in the US.
Especially in the US. So you can enjoy it in a number of ways and give us your feedback on that. But back from the US into the land of Bärsteins and Sauerkraut and big, big sausages, this week's and last week's theme week is Oktoberfest on Viagra.
Yeah. It's a massive theme, 2 weeks of German smut from the late 60s and early 70s.
And it's got so many subgenres. We could dive into this for more than a week or two, but we're going to try to give a comprehensive overview of what it is that makes this German naughtiness so incredibly unique.
This was the intro music to the film Run Virgin Run, which was described by a distributor in the USA as, "Here's a charming little tale for those who enjoy lederhosen and lusty ladies. In fact, Run Virgin Run plays like Oktoberfest on Viagra."
There's plenty enough to get through in the Oktoberfest on Viagra, so let's dive straight in. And we've divided it into categories, much like a quiz. Because there's certain themes emerging here. And the first one is the Kronhausens.
Yes, and double. This is a parallel to basically the Language of Love films in Sweden at the same time. And the Kronhausens was an American couple, actually. It's not so well known to people. They think they were German. Actually, they are also listed as Swedish if you Google them. They were sexologists Very much inspired by the same, you know, the sex reports from the US from that time. And reading up on them, I also found that they had an extensive collection of pornographic art. Mm. And they also did the notorious art exhibition in Lund in Sweden in the late 60s, which was very, very much a big scandal.
Purely cultural interest in smut, obviously. But it's fascinating that the Germans should have to import their sexologists, given that they had homegrown experts such as Wilhelm Reich and commercial ones such as Beate Uhse. But true. Then again, I guess in Sweden we had our own semi-imports in the form of Ingenstein. Purely
and
homegrown,
there is
definitely
a
Scandi.
There's a very interesting segue here between the German sex ed films and the Swedish ones, because when I talked to Inge Ivarsson, the producer of the Language of Love films, he told me that early on, it was supposedly the Kronhausens who would be the experts in the Language of Love films. So they came to Sweden, they had very long on negotiations, and then Inge and his wife invited the Kronhausens for dinner, and they suggested a foursome. But
purely for research purposes.
Yeah, but Inge thought they were kind of disgusting as people, so he declined, and there was no cooperation.
Hmm. What might have been in cinematic smut history. So the first film in our double Kronhausen's bill is Sex Freedom in Germany, or Wunderland der Liebe, der große deutsche Sexreport. But in terms of structure, it is remarkably similar to The Language of Love in terms of people in white coats sitting around pontificating about sex. And then we cut to the stuff that people really come to watch in the cinema at the time. So,
yeah, it's the varnish, isn't it? The white coat varnish that you need to make it respectable.
And this is a bit of the theme of the three different topics we're going to have. So we're going to have sort of nudity in education, nudity in nature, and nudity in history or literature.
Exactly.
But in this case, they've got some fascinating stuff, such as the segment with the political party called the Sexual Democrats.
Sounds very similar to some of the parties we have in Sweden, actually.
But no, it's
I would
German
have voted
sex
for the Sexual Democrat any day.
Yeah. And, you know, if Cicilline can stand for parliament, then I don't know why the Sexual Democrats couldn't have a swing at government.
Do we know what
government
the results they had in the local elections?
Who?
Whereas they call Cicilline's them in German, the erections.
The erections.
Bad one.
I don't think they actually qualified for any federal position, but it could be because they didn't exactly look electable. Somebody compared the leader to Anton LaVey in a very bad wig, although his secretary is much, much cuter,
that's
apart from
one.
Too much makeup.
Yeah.
And that's just one of the things. What is the other thing?
A naked jazz performance in the Bavarian Alps?
Yes.
Who would pass on that?
Yeah. lesbian discoveries between women, stripping act of a girl whipping herself.
Defrocked gay priest, good one.
Yes, who's very reprimanding. We should say that none of these films, fortunately, require any subtitle reading skills because they're all dubbed into English. And what an English it is dubbed into, not just any old or Queen's language or American slang. No, for some reason they've gone for Liverpudlian, so they all sound like the Beatles being interviewed. Or worse.
That's great. And also, actually, some of these films were not even the same version because they did an American edit for them.
They did. But I'm now thinking, is Liverpudlian the British equivalent of Bavarian?
Oh, yeah. Mm. It could be. Okay, yeah. Someone did their research.
Intentionally, probably. Could be.
Yeah. Yeah, and so this is, as someone pointed out, it's all very bizarre, not very erotic, and it's humorless, but still entertaining. So
unintentionally, yes. So
yeah,
and of course, stitched together with this young couple running through the streets throwing snowballs. Very strange, and it does have some household names: Dieter Kiesler, big producer for Visconti, and we have Joe Hembus.
Beate Uusa actually bought the biggest porn distribution company in Sweden and incorporated it. So I think the Beate Uusa Corporation like ate the whole pornographic industry in Europe bit by bit over the years.
Interesting. I mean, she had a fascinating history, and they've even made a film about her, you know, subject in her own right. And then it was stock market listed as well, the Beate Uusa empire. Yeah. And then it just died a death in the age of the internet and downloads. So,
rumors that used to say that the porn industry is bigger than the military industrial complex, that's over with. It was never true, but it's less so now than ever.
Another thing that unites all of these films, apart from being German, is they all have shockingly varied music.
Yeah.
Much of which was issued on albums and singles and survives to this day.
Definitely. And also it's like a funny mix of both what we're used to in the kind of erotic nudie films from the time, this sort of funky improvised soundtracks going on forever and ever with wah-wah guitars and organs, and mixed with the sort of Bavarian oompa-oompa style. So it's a true mixture. And here, in this specific film, I think it's really cool. They have a German progressive band called Apocalypse.
How do you like this? What are they proving? Where are the good old German morals? Where are the health profits? What kind of customs are these? And where is true young love?
To the next set of white coats, Freedom to Love, Freiheit für die Liebe.
Fülis and Eberhard are at it again, the Kronhausen.
Our favorite Kronhausen are back.
And this one they directed, they didn't do that with the last one. And this is also extremely similar to the film Love Play, starring Inge and Sten Hegeler, the Danish sexologists, where they read out loud from letters to their column in one of the biggest newspapers, and people tell of their sort of sexual problems. And here the Kronhausens have done dramatizations of four cases from their files.
Mm. And this is what's fascinating to me, is this one is from the year 69, which I'm not sure if that's when it was shot or released or maybe the same, but it is very close in timing to The Language of Love, so much so that they were really in parallel rather than one ripping off the other. They were clearly, and as you said, the Kronhausens were considered for The Language of Love. So maybe after they got the rejection letter from Inge Iversen, they would often said, screw the Swedes. Yeah, we'll do this in Germany.
Yeah.
Somebody will put up the money for it. And they did.
Definitely.
And so, but it also, not to dismiss them, but I think that there's a little bit more, not sure about the word, elegance or better cinematic quality to, you know, The Language of Love, just in terms of how it's shot, edited, and the whole mise-en-scène.
Yeah, and that's due to Torgny Wickman, who was a talented director.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
So not saying not worth seeing, because they're great fun and definitely of their kind, but it's interesting to compare and contrast them.
Yeah, and then and here we have a couple of real exclamation marks in terms of the guest stars.
Yes, they did better there.
Yeah, which include Hugh Hefner, the legendary
playing himself
publisher from Playboy, and also Betty Dodson, who was a very major sexologist. She was called here an erotic artist, but I know that she was also very much in the front line of women's liberation and things like that.
Mm. And it was, I'm sure they managed to persuade a couple to do the intimate scene, because we have Kes Vanderwusten and Franulka Vanderwusten, their names you don't hear often enough anymore, appearing in it. And to me, what was fascinating, that even though it was shot in color, the FSK, which is the Classification and Censorship Board in West Germany, only approved and passed a black and white version of it. So I don't know if it was released in black and white, but obviously we have it here in beautiful color.
And also I think a sign of the time for this film, and as you say, it's from 69, it's around the same time that the Beatles went to India and met their guru. And so the music was very sort of hippie style. And in this film, you obviously get a soundtrack with a sitar.
First prog music and now sitars. We're really testing our listeners' musical patience here. So, but there is something different to come. It's not going to be pure audio torture. Next, we're off to the island of Sylt.
Yes, we have two films with that theme. I think it's in the North Sea.
Not in the Baltic, I think.
And it used to be, I think it used to be a resort all the way back to the Nazi German times, wasn't it?
Yes. And which, of course, even the communists appropriated the FKK, Freikörperkultur, free body culture, the purity of the naked German flesh.
Yes, and I mean, it's still a big thing in Germany, isn't it? You still see naked people tanning in the parks in the major cities in the summer.
Yes, English Garden in Munich. That was on display when I was there, in the summer. They obviously don't need an archipelago to get naked, but it does help to have an island like Sylt as an excuse, at least if you're making a film, because nudity galore ensues.
And this is Naked and Free, the New Lifestyle, or Hot Sand on Sylt in English. Heißer Sand auf Sylt.
Yes, wouldn't make sense in English because I'm sure very few people at the time knew what or where Sylt was. So, but populated by a groovy bunch, this island is, and in this is a hopeless square who nevertheless manages to hook up with a young blonde. And what's strange about it is that there are things that never appeared on the island of Sylt which come into the film in terms of bizarre splicing mashups. I mean, this is really postmodern type of inserts into a film of nudity. We have Jake LaMotta and Rocky Graziano as guest stars. What the hell?
And LaMotta is, of course, the Bronx boxer that we all know from Scorsese's film.
Yeah, Raging Bull. And but here they're ogling.
They're ogling the nude babes, but... Yeah. I guess it was reaction shots because they probably would never were on Sylt.
No, I'm pretty sure. So apparently it's all to do with the fact that softcore director Peter Savage was obviously handed this film for American distribution, and it was maybe too German for him. So his friends for Rocky Gutson and Jake LaMotta, he co-authored the autobiography of Raging Bull. So he obviously got them to appear in additional scenes for the film, and boom, you've got marquee names for an American audience, as if German nudity wasn't enough.
Exactly, and hence it has two production years, 1968 and 1971. 1971 marking the US version.
So Jerzy Mack, responsible for the German one and for the other Sylt film, and then Peter Savage, so... They probably never even met, and I'm sure that Jerzy was less than entirely thrilled with what was done with his Sylty nudie epic.
Exactly. And here, going on with music, now we're suddenly having some soul R&B funky tune from a band I never heard of called The Constellations, and the song The New Lifestyle.
At least the music is getting better. that some of the films are too, because we're staying in Sylt, this time for Ready, Willing and Able, or Sonne, Sylt und Käse, Krabben.
Which means?
Sun, Sylt and something, something, crabs.
Okay. And we're crabs? Not talking about the disease.
No, we're definitely not. This is the ones you'd eat. So this is set at the Eden Playboy Club, where topless models Ready and Able, you almost wish they were sisters, are both gunning for the Miss Sylt contest crown. And in the course of this, they meet with a bunch of men, including very important Hugo and the chauffeur Marcus and geeky Edgar. So this is yet another of the count or many, many Sylt films, which is really an excuse to be naked from beginning to the end of it. But it does have a really, really catchy soundtrack. So somebody commented that this is effectively like an old Frankie Avalon, Annette Funicello beach picture.
Yeah, it's like those beach party films.
Yeah, beach blanket films.
Yeah.
Elvis did a few of them too, except it's on a nude beach. Yeah.
And you know that only East Germany did them too, so we should really get our hands on a few of those as well.
Oh, yeah.
So they were not only about five-year plans and tractors, they also did beach party films. So that would be fun.
Well, it saves the cost on costumes and clothes and everything else. And,
And also, this actually stars one German favorite of mine that we should have more films from, and that's Ingrid Steger, who was in one of my favorite movies, Ich ein Groupie. I a Groupie, which I think was basically a Swiss film, and she's like following this rock band as a groupie, and we have a 16 millimeter print of the film in our archives, and it's just nuts. But she's a fun, gorgeous German blonde, very typical for the time. Mama said to me, we got a happy life run.
So we've done white coat German nudity, and we've done German beach nudity, and now we're on to costume film nudity. Although I think
historical,
that's a bit of a
kind.
Oxymoron, because either they have costumes or they have nudity, but can't have
But I
both.
Think all three of them are good examples of excuses to pass the censorship, aren't they?
Well, again, it's a parallel to what we saw in Sweden, where Mac Ahlberg was busy cranking out the smutty classic adaptations of Zola and other ones. So
yes,
I think
famous novels.
We discussed this before, Literary Women, we had that as a theme 1 week ago. And from my recollection, it was twofold, one of which is it's out of copyright, so hence very, very cheap source material that you can plunder and use and abuse to your heart's delight because the author is dead and isn't going to complain and isn't going to come after you and sue you. Secondly, like you said, it did give this veneer of respectability. So both the filmmakers looking for financing for their smut epic and importantly also audiences going to see it saying, no. You know, I'm not after the breasts. I'm only interested in the literary adaptation, see how faithful they were to the original. And the Germans, and especially the Austrians, of course, had a whole cottage industry around Josephine Mutzenbacher, sort of like, Cleland's Fanny Hill.
Right, yeah.
I don't know. Countless adaptations, spin-offs, prequels, sequels, origin stories, and she pops up and kind of cameo in one of these. But the first one that we have is How to Play the Seduction Game, or Hilfe, mich liebt ein Jungfrau. Help, I am loved by a virgin.
Yes. That's an interesting thing. I think all of these titles have a completely different American title. It's just not the translation. They just changed the whole title.
Mm.
But obviously, this is based on a French novel by Werner Sibasso that I never heard of. And that supposedly was called How to Play the Seduction Game in English.
Which works. It's a good classic literature. It's sort of like Liaison Dangereux, although far from that kind of quality adaptation. So in this, the Count Armand is pursued for his bad debts by various creditors and soldiers. And despite being on the run from his debtors, he just can't keep his hands off all the ladies who just happen to cross his paths, you know, any time of day or night. And it all turns into a kind of the typical ribald costume sex comedy of the kind that we've seen so often. And again, it's not so much a movie, again, somebody pointed out on IMDb, as a script written just to have an excuse for a lot of titties. And even though you don't get the full-on sex, but more of a suggestion, it is definitely a voyeur's paradise, especially if you like your 18th century kind of corsets and accoutrements.
And also, it's, I mean, chock full of this kind of burlesque German humor that was very, very much running through many of these films. I mean, it was not like the Swedish films of the time, which were about social problems and like serious dramas. But here it's like much more, you know, sweaty and funny and also silly men, which is very similar to what was going on in the US at the time with the nudie cuties, where you have all of these buxom, beautiful, beautiful young women and these sort of middle-aged geeks guys who happen to stumble upon all these nudes.
Well, and I think this is an example of the fact that these films traveled was in spite of, not because of the comedy, because famously European comedy is the hardest thing to export. You know, what's funny in Italy or to Spanish people or Italians or Swedes just doesn't work in other countries.
It didn't matter what the theme was of the film, because as long as it was nudity, it was sellable. Look how they launched Ingmar Bergman in the US at the time with Summer with Monica and Persona and other films, you know, Virgin Spring. Yes. They were all launched, you know, lurid ad campaigns.
Yes. And let's not forget that, you know, of all the bad film, Ingmar Bergman's comedies were probably the worst. And
indeed,
the least watchable and the least that traveled. They don't appear in anybody's sort of top 10 or top 100 list for
That's
great
true.
Films of all time.
Yeah. So moving on, this is also an example of a very different title in English and German, Teach Me, or Auch Fummeln will gelernt sein. And you are my German translator friend. Can you tell me what that means?
So, if I'm interpreting correctly, it means even fumbling will be educational, or you can learn even from fumbling, I think.
Ah, okay. So, okay, interesting. Yeah.
So, again, lots and lots of pornographic puns in this film, again set in 19th century Germany. Yeah. And again, not a count, but a lieutenant this time, Ferdinand, obviously a womanizer. And yet he is not ready for the wedding night. So he's got to tell the story of how it is that he came to this point and his various sexual encounters and mishaps along the way. Directed by Kurt Namach, we again have the wonderful Christine Schubert in the female lead in 1971.
But I must say, I do love, and my humor is so simple, Astrid Boner is in it. A great name.
You'd think that it's a pseudonym, but you know, somebody doesn't want to give the real name for appearing in a film like this. But being Germany, she might be Astrid Bonner.
Probably,
Bonner.
Yes. I'm being dishonest here.
It is
and also Bonner. They tried to cash in on the Mutzenbacher films here in Austria with the title there, Ferdinand und die Mutzenbacherin.
Yes, it's kind of, again, maybe for copyright reasons, they couldn't imply that the prostitute was the famous Josephine Mutzenbacher.
Yeah.
But of course, it's sort of like Emmanuel. If it's generic enough name, then you can get away with calling your film Emmanuel in Soho, even though it has nothing to do with The original Manor. And by the way, I think we didn't mention the last podcast, or maybe we did. The director of the original Emmanuel films recently passed away.
Just checking. Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sad, but...
Yes, yes. Yeah. I mean, he was a trailblazer for sure.
And not you just have for
listed,
Emmanuel.
You have listed all of these fantastic international titles for this film.
Lovingly stolen from Internet Movie Database. Yeah. But yes, it just shows the sheer variety of... Yeah. Inventiveness that when it comes to selling these films locally.
We'll tell them in English. I think it's fun. We have France,
yes.
Special feelings.
Mm.
We have Italy, seven desires from a virgin.
A virgin? I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Portuguese, emoções particulares. So a bit like French, particular exactly. Emotions, a special emotion. But in Spain, next door, they go for erotic Vienna.
Exactly.
Vienna Erotica.
And in Sweden, we always talk about the bull Ferdinand from Disney. But here we have Ferdinand, the bull that didn't want to.
Mm.
So that's an odd one.
Yeah, he just wants to sit and smell the flowers.
Yeah.
And then we have Teach Me Again appearing in the US, but not good enough to have one English title. It's also called The Game Schoolgirls Play. And again, doesn't make any sense. What
sounds
schoolgirls?
Far away from the theme of the film.
Yes, but again, it goes with the fact that the poster makes no sense whatsoever because you've got a woman in a very clearly 1970s, you know, German blonde looking over her shoulder, sort of semi-dressed, nothing to do with 19th century Vienna, but yeah. I'm sure it sells. So
but
who's going
to
ask for their
that
money
happened,
back?
Yeah, that happened from time to time in Sweden too. When a film didn't work at the box office, they renamed it, made a new poster, and put it out again as something else, and hoping that people were suckers enough to go and watch it.
I think Kroger Bab and
his
descendants perfected
they lived
that,
off that.
So,
for sure.
So, and finally, even in West Germany, where Fummen had an original working title as Beate oder die Folgen der Pornografie, Beate and the Consequences of Pornography, again. Doesn't make sense, but maybe I need to rewatch it more carefully than I did.
Yeah. And then we have the next film is actually not, well, it's in historical times, but it's actually situated in three different eras, 1908, 1925, during World War II, and in 1963. And this one is actually called the same thing in German as in English.
Ah,
the Sinful Bed. Das sündige Bett.
Bett, yes. So it's a portmanteau of a film in which the bed is the narrative device that links all these different stories from different eras. So it's a young couple who buy an antique bed in a used furniture store. And as they're carrying it back, rolling it through the town on the way to the home, the bed tells a story of everything that it's seen on its action, on its mattresses over the years. And hence, we get these flashbacks to... the early 1900s, you know, post World War One, World War Two, and 1963. So it's a fun one.
I have a question. Where on the bed are the vocal cords?
How do you anthropomorphize a bed? I'm thinking the headboard, but it's a bit metallic, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not
anyway,
sure. Yeah, anyways.
You're too... Yeah, it's a dramatic device, smart peddler.
I don't
just,
buy
just
it. I don't
roll
buy it.
With it.
I don't buy it.
If it had been a sofa, I would have gone along with it, but no.
Completely have gotten it, yeah.
What's funny is it's not the only bed tale film that we have on Cultpix. Of course, we have the short film by Mac Ahlberg called Just the Bed. And
which was commissioned by a bed factory.
Yes, I love that. You know, who probably got more than they asked for, or maybe they got exactly what they asked for. I don't know what the brief was to him.
No,
but...
But it's still there, and I think it was his first film before he made the first I, a Woman film.
Mm.
So it has, and it's a short, but it definitely has its film historical, you know, place.
And another nice parallel to the fact, because Mac Ahlberg, before he started directing, he was a director of photography. And he would later, again, as we've said many times, cinematographer for films like Reanimator and Beverly Hills Cop 2. But hiding in this film under the pseudonym of Michael Alexander is none other than, I think, Oscar-winning, am I right in saying that, cinematographer Michael Ballhaus.
That's mind-boggling.
It really is, but yeah. It explains why the film looks so damn good, yeah. Because there's a reason that Fassbender and Scorsese worked with him, because he was famous for this kind of lush, crisp, handsome, gorgeous look that this film is just saturated with. So if you need an excuse to watch smut, forget the literary pedigree, forget anything else, just say, I'm watching a Michael Ballhaus film.
Watch it for the cinematography.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Just like I read Playboy for the articles.
Exactly. And this film ends up, and I've chosen that music clip with the couple finally going home, but they are taking a short pit stop in a roundabout in the middle of the town where they undress and have sex.
Moving on from historical costumes, but not quite. The next few films have a Swedish connection to them, although we are still in Oktoberfest Germany. The first one of them being Daughters of Joy, which to me sounds like a Nazi cabaret.
Yeah, it's an old title, but I do love the alternative US title, Sexy Susan Sins Again, because obviously was a Sexy Susan film before this one.
Yeah, but couldn't they have kept the alliteration going all the way? I mean, three quarters of the Sexy Susan Sins sequentially.
Good. Maybe too many syllables for the average Joe going to the movie theater. Yeah. I don't know.
Could be.
But here you're lovely German title, Frau Wirtin hat auch einen Grafen. And is that the hostess also has a count, or is it just my imagination?
Yes, and because it was a series of films with the Frau Wirtin, so it's very much of, and hence why it's known as Sexy Susan in the American versions of it. But yes, there's several of them, which we don't have, but I'm sure we can get our hands on one day. Sure. So this gives you a taster of what it is, because it's a period piece, as the line notes from the film said, period piece of ass. So it's babes in Germany in the revolutionary 1810s who pretend to run a brothel, whereas in actual fact, they have a printing press in the basement churning out revolutionary pamphlets.
Yeah.
And they come to the rescue of a young poet come lawyer who is due to hang, but the village women rescue him by distracting the soldiers with copious amounts of sex and nudity.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, and what's the Swedish connection here?
Yeah, this stars a favorite of ours, Harald Leibniz, who by no means was Swedish, but to us he's forever remembered for the male lead role in the Swedish sex comedy Som hon bäddar får han ligga, or Do You Believe in Swedish Sin from 1970,
I do.
Which also happens to be the title of the poster book that I wrote.
Yes.
And the funny thing with him is that, and it's kind of typical for the time, he was a middle-aged man, not all that good-looking, but who has sex with all these beautiful young women in film after film after film. And I don't know what he had that I don't, but I'm envious.
He had a better agent.
Exactly. Had a better clearly. But so it's funny. Why he was imported to Sweden for that film, I don't know. And he's dubbed into Swedish in the film.
So it's not like the Astrid Lindgren films where it's a co-production between Sweden and Germany. So you had to have a token alcoholic actor sort of joining in and just sort of moving the lips so they get dubbed into the local language later.
And this is also what they did with the Beck criminal films. They also had one German guy as one of the detectives.
Not necessarily alcoholic, but maybe just German.
A bit, yeah.
So Susanna in Napoleon-era Germany is a series of films. In this one, the star is Tori Tordai. She was in all the Sexy Susan films, but or as they were known in German, obviously, the Frau Wirtinnen films, although she didn't do much else. So she's a bit like Ulla from the Bedside Mazurka films. So,
right.
Yeah. You had your niche, and after that, you couldn't get cast in anything more mainstream.
Exactly. And also, I mean, here you had some actresses that are coming. You see them in this special type of films from the time, like Pascal Petit, who was a big actress and worked for some of the main French directors. Edwig Fenech, who worked with a lot of our favorites, like Mario Bava and these people. And also Anke Syring, who was in one of the Joe Sarno, the German films Joe Sarno made.
Right, yes. Well, this one is a real pudding in terms of, and pudding, as we say in Swedish.
Yes, exactly.
Being co-production between West Germany, Italy, France, Austria, and Hungary for the cheap shooting locations, I'm sure. And
of course, that costumes. The costumes, exactly. Yeah. And moving on, Harald is back in Moonlighting Mysteries. And I think this film stands out among these 2 weeks of thematic films because this is much more of a serious, if you will, although it contains nudity, a thriller.
Mm. Yes, there's no beach, there's no white coats, there's no costumes. It's contemporary setting, not on an island called Sylt. Mm. And they're trying to really go for the erotic thriller genre, which the Americans did, slightly better in the 80s or trashier. But it definitely has that kind of popping color and very, screwed up drama. And again, what I love about this is just the sheer number of titles and the variety of them that they managed to sell this under in the different countries. So again, I'm reminded of the lesson I learned early on, which is the job of a distributor is not the logistics of getting the film out. It's creating the interest for getting the audience in by hook or by crook.
And this one, I think the original title, which it also comes back in many countries, is I'm Sleeping with My Killer. And I like that.
Yeah.
It's a good title.
It's sort of like I Know Who Killed Me.
Exactly, yeah.
And kind of ask the question. But in France, they went for two titles. So initially, they went for the more highbrows of Je Couchais Avec Mon Assassin. I'm Sleeping with My Assassin, but then maybe it didn't sell enough, so maybe it was reissued under L'amour, la mort et le diable, the love, the death, and the devil.
Yeah, exactly.
Italy,
Lovers at Midnight was the Spanish title. That's also weird.
Yes, but in Italy, they have to go one step further and explain it, that it's La signora ha dormito nuda con il suo assassino. So it's the lady who slept naked with her assassin. It's just, it's not just...
Not in her pajama.
Sleeping. Yes, very, got to make that clear. It was naked sleeping that went on.
But I love this about this time in Italy where all titles were like that. A film in Sweden that was called Django Kills could in the original be... please kill me because I'm cold. And if you don't shoot me, I will still be cold. But then the devil will come and take me. That was like the original title. And it's, I don't know why. It's insane.
It is. And then they're trying to cash in on Hitchcock with Dial Love for Murder.
Yeah.
Makes no sense at all. But then again, no less nonsensical as the final title they settled on and the title that we have it under, which is Moonlighting Mistress.
Yeah. How does that fit in? I don't know.
2, Sexy Fairy Tales. A little bit of a risky kind of way of doing it, because obviously associated with kids. But I love the poster to the next one, which was A Magic Story for Grown-Ups Under the Age of 80.
That's a good tagline, yeah. And it's funny, it must have been a thing going on, because we have a bunch of these films with different fairy tale themed erotic films. I don't know where they got that from, but especially the
again,
US
cheap
one.
Source of non copyrighted inspiration.
Yeah, there you go again. And here, this one didn't really cash in on it in the German title, because it was called Hansel and Gretel Get Lost in the Woods.
Mm-hmm. Innocent enough, you might show that to your kids if you're not careful. Yeah. But it is very much the grim fairy tale, except this time Hansel is very frustrated by the reluctance of his girlfriend Gretel to give in to his amorous thrusts. And so while they're out traveling, they meet this very gorgeous and sexually liberated Countess Helga on a horse, who invites them to her country mansion, spending some time. And there ensues a weekend of very wicked mind and body games. So I saw it described as like a fairy tale directed by Jess Franco. Although I'm sure he must have done one or two.
And somewhere, if you read the synopsis, it says she's not called the Countess Helga. It's just called a witch. And I think it was also called the Wicked Witch in some areas.
Spelled W-Y-T-C-H-E.
Yeah. And to me, the appeal of this film and the Swedish connection is the wonderful, beautiful Barbara Klingered, or Barbro Klingered, as she was christened, a.k.a. Barbara Scott. And we have another film with her on Cult Picks, Jag vill ligga med din älskade mamma, or Swedish Confessions. And I think the Swedish title is more accurate. I Want to Sleep with Your Lover, Mom, from 1977. And she was a really good actress, and also did hardcore with great enthusiasm. It was a very weird mix. And also I found out, Googling and trying to find out more about it, she was also in some serious films. She would have starred in a film by Arne Mattsson, and there is only a short snippet of that film surviving. Mm. And also, not many people have seen it, but the notorious director Bjarne Vibenius, who made Thriller, A Cruel Picture, and also a children's film, which we do have on Cult Picks, the third and last film he made so far was Breaking Point, which is both ultra-violent and pornographic. And
it's so extreme that I don't know if we'll ever carry it even on Cult Picks.
No, it's basically a lost film. You can find a fourth generation print of it on the internet, in the dark, shady parts of the internet. But she will forever be remembered as the shift stick girl.
Mm.
And I won't say more.
No need to explain why.
That. No.
It's because she refused to drive automatics.
Exactly. But the thing with her is that there are some articles about her, and then it's complete silence for about 10 years in her life. And then a friend of mine actually had done some research, and I asked him about it. And she died in a traffic accident, only 49 years old. But at the same time, it says in the ad that she already had a very, very serious kidney disease that she probably would have succumbed to anyway. Right. So an interesting fate that would be very... I'm very curious to find out more about her.
Yeah, definitely worth digging deeper and highlighting her. But yeah, tragic and sad, only 49. What an age.
And you have also dug up all of these funny international titles for it.
Yes, before that, there's some controversy about this film, which is that whether the American version cheats audiences by being 5 minutes shorter and have had bits of it snipped off, and the best bits, apparently. So I haven't compared the lengths, and there is nudity in it as such. So I don't know what could be missing, but I'd have to watch it more closely to be sure and then get my hands on the German original. But you're right. It's again, Hansel and Gretel wasn't clearly appealing enough to the Raincoat Brigades to frequent the kind of grindhouse cinemas where this could have been shown abroad. So, hey, off we are to the inventive new film title land, where we come up with such masterpieces of headline writing imagination as...
I just looked up the Italian one, what it means. It's called Favole calde per svedese bollenti, and that should be hot tales for hot Swedes.
I did wonder if it was Swedes in the Swedish. Yeah, I thought so.
Weird. And in but Sweden, again, it was called The Wild Bedfellows.
Yes, again, sticking with the bed theme, but again, does not make sense. I know we've had Barbo Klingeret, but I'm sure the Italians couldn't have hung the title on that one. Single hook.
Yeah.
Even more bizarre, and my Greek isn't good enough, and I haven't had time to Google Translate, but there it's called Gymnise Mia Rolls-Royce. Now, for all my shortcomings in Greek, modern and ancient, Rolls-Royce, I think, means a very expensive car. Exactly. What the hell that has to do with this, apart from being a countess or Hansel and Gretel, is beyond me.
Yeah, but there it is. I have been translating while you were talking. Naked in a Rolls Royce.
Ah, okay.
Why?
I don't remember that particular scene. Maybe it got cut out, or maybe I wasn't paying enough attention. But so in Denmark...
The Danish one is actually the best.
Yes, bit of a wordplay there.
Very hard to translate.
Hansel and Gretel in our...
the besexed forest, sexed, the bewitched
in
forest.
In the besexed forest, yeah.
Something like that. Hansel Gretel in the sexed skull.
You like the Danish one, but I have to hand it to the British ones because, again, this one I quite like. It's called Hands Off Gretel, as in Hands Off Gretel, or Hands and Gretel. Get it?
Ba-dum. Exactly. But wasn't it the Brits that also renamed the Josephine Mutzenbacher films with funny titles?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they did. And we have them on Cult Picks. So go and investigate for yourself.
I remember that, yeah.
Video title in the US, quite prosaic, Erotic Adventures of Hansel and Gretel, whereas in the more titillating cinematic poster was How to Make Love to a Virgin.
Okay.
And then the German alternative title, which again, I'm scratching my head, Lass uns knuspern, Mäuschen, which means let us nibble, little mouse.
Oh, because the house is made out of cookies.
Hmm.
In the original, I don't know if it is in the film, but yeah.
No mouse were injured in the making of this house.
Or impregnated during the making of this
Or impregnated
film.
Even. Was the mouse a virgin? Is that how you make love to it? You're just going to have to watch it.
Yeah. So basically, these are the films that we wanted to go into detail about because they did form some very interesting themes. And there are more films in this season, and I would point out at least one of them is of the Bavarian style, which was so popular. And also, unfortunately, we don't have that yet, but I hope we will be able to have some time, the film starring the Swedish Marie Ekorre. Which was one of the most famous of these Bavarian style comedies in Sweden, at least. Without Knickers in the Tyrol. And there is a story about that one. And now I'm out on a limb here because we're really going to hang her out. But according to a fellow centerfold girl / film star, Marie Ekorre demanded in her contract that they bring a cow from Sweden to Germany because she didn't believe there was milk in Germany. True or not? Never check a good story.
Never check a good story. I'll buy that.
Yeah.
I do realize that for all the Umfa Umfa and Oktoberfest, there's just one film authentic with Lederhosen. But do check Cult Picks to find out what that is. And I am sure, positive, überzeugt, even as we say in German, that we will be returning to this topic again in the future because there is no end of German smut. It's and we
not.
Have but sampled a tiny, tiny little Vorspeise of what is to come on Cult Picks. And should we say that we're going to be off soon, hitting the road again, when
That's
we go
right.
to the Lumiere Film Festival in just over a week, and the MIPS market in Lyon, where we're going to be meeting with lots of cool distributors and rights holders to secure even more fun films for CultPix. We have a lot of great films on CultPix, thanks to connections and meetings we had last time, and I'm sure there'll be even more this time. So we'll play you out now, and thank you for listening to us as we've rambled our way around German cinema history, geography, and smuttiness. With me, your host, Django Nudo.
Smut peddler.
Grau. Verlier Geduld, Verstand und Haare. Ich hätte gerne eine Frau. Und die Hoffnung will mir schwinden, eine Partnerin zu finden, die mir ebenbürtig ist. Nein, da ist kein Glück in Sicht. Sie muss nicht schön sein. Sie muss nicht klug sein, nein, sie muss nicht reich sein, kein Modell mit langen Schritten, doch dicken Pippen. Wie eine stetig offene Wunde aus der Seele. Das Blut, einzig Trost sind kleine Hunde. Ein feines Fräulein wäre gut, ein feines Fräulein wäre toll. Ich bin auch gar nicht anspruchsvoll, ich bin auch gar nicht wählerisch. Sie muss nicht reich sein, doch um eines möchte ich bitten. Dicke Titten. Ich bin auch gar nicht anspruchsvoll. Große Brüste wären toll. Sie muss nicht schön sein. Sie muss nicht klug sein. Sie muss nur reich sein an Fettgewebe. Bitte, bitte. Sie wird nichts bei mir vermissen. Sie braucht mich auch gar nicht küssen. Nicht mit Trauben.